Hey guys, HanaGalKiss here. Join myself and my fellow co-hosts, Edward, Kendra, LaShawn, Albert, the other Sean, Wyatt, and many others, as we're going to dive into a grab bag gimmick of pop culture and non-pop culture topics. We're on iTunes, HanaGalKiss, Spreaker, HanaGalKiss, and many other social media websites. We take requests, and you can email us at hanukfeedback@gmail.com. Finally, a podcast that will never be questioned, ever.
Pardon the interruption. I have some news which I believe you will find most interesting.
Would you like to hear the latest in Marvel television, film, video games, and comic books? Or are you looking for some ideas on what to pick up on New Comic Book Day? Well, join Mike and Eric on Mighty Marvel Geeks every Saturday night on Sorcerer Radio and every Sunday on the Weeby Geeks Network for all things Marvel.
There is a matter that requires your attention.
Mighty Marvel Geeks. Assemble.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Episode of Hummock, What a Haul. Tonight we sit down with artist creator of Black Dog and Rebel Rose, Danny Smith. Per usual, detailed plot spoilers and language. To Kendra, I am going to be interviewing Danny Smith, creator of Black Dog and Rebel Rose. And not only is this a first for us, I hear this is going to become a major motion picture.
You got that right.
Yes. When you become famous, at least, you know, say for like that blurb on a Galcast. But
got it.
I will say this much, Danny. I've been looking at all your work. Very impressed with it. Kendra, thank you for setting up this interview. Before we get into the good stuff, I like to, of course, ask my artists, writers, simple questions, of course. Where and when were you when you first imaged, you know, pen to paper?
According to my mother, I was 18 months old. Sadly, my memory does not go back that far. I've been drawing most of my life, like probably most people would say. Probably wouldn't have known that I would have had any talent at all looking at my early drawings. It was just like, wow, Danny, you know, you're awesome. Not really, but yeah, I was a little dinky-doo. I've been doing it my whole life, pretty much.
Another question, of course, we're all comic book fans here. What is your favorite comic book, or what comic book have you read that kind of inspired you to become a comic book artist?
The biggest two influences, actually, would probably be The Crow by James O'Barr ElfQuest. I was into Elf first book I was into, and then The Crow followed probably about a year or so later. James O'Barr, you can probably see similarities in my work with his. Still to this day, I still hope that one of these days I can actually own an original sketch by him. That's like my fangirl moment there. But those two, that, you know, ElfQuest and The Crow, are probably my two biggest influences, and you can probably see both influences in my work.
I have to ask you, do you ever cosplay at any conventions, or do you ever, like, draw any cosplayers? Have they ever come up to you and said, you know, can you draw me an image?
I have never actually done cosplay myself. I would probably terrify people if I even made the noble attempt, you know. I had my Ren Faire years where I was running around in a corset or a bodice and, you know, hanging out with that crew. But I do love cosplayers. I am definitely... and cause, especially as a way for the fans to help promote their favorite comics, their favorite stories, their favorite films, whatever it is that they're into. One of probably my biggest bucket list things as a creator would be to see somebody dressed up as one of my characters, either Stryker or Rose or Alexius or whoever it happens to be in the BDRR series at a convention. It hasn't happened yet.
whether it be her actual profile or even for her movie or even the book page, is that she's always pushing other creators with not only her work, but also she's found she'll have creators that'll come to her with things that they've made, like the Brawl for Rose that she offered up for anybody. So, you know, go ahead, absolutely. I would love to see you cosplay this. And she fully, you know, not only reaches out to fans, but encourages them to be part of her world too and be along for the ride as she creates it. I think that that is something that is really cool that we don't see very often with a creator, someone who's willing to touch base and be on point with her fans.
And I gotta tell you, Kendra, you hit the nail on the head there. I cannot stand it when creators are standoffish with the public. What's the point? Who's out there buying your books? Who's out there watching your movies? Who's out there tooting your horn, so to speak? I mean, it's essentially something that I believe in passing on the good karma. You need to pass on the good karma. Started out as a broke-ass artist who nobody knew anything about me. I had to put myself out there. I had to continuously do it for half of a decade before anybody knew who I was. Ultimately, meeting with my fans and talking to my fans is probably one of my greatest thrills. When I go to conventions or I go to gallery shows or I go to kind of gathering involving the comic book community or fandom, so to speak, the pop culture community, really. You have a bunch of creators out there who are signing, and they're charging you for it. I would never charge my fans to have me sign something. Even if I were as big as Stan Lee, just throwing that out there, I don't believe in charging people. You've got to be grateful for what you have, and you've got to connect with the fans on a personal level, which is probably why I have almost 5,000 Facebook friends and followers, because I just accept everybody that comes up. And but again, I firmly believe that that's good karma. You know, that's my philosophy. Pass on the good karma, it's going to come back to you as well.
I have noticed, though, I was recently at Wizard Con Philly. I came back with about 50-somewhat cards of artists that I'm going to be talking to. These are all independent artists. And the whole idea is, I don't know if you listened to the other podcast that usually guest on, The Pullback on Geekcast. They're going to just be talking about the corporate comics from IDW and Image. We're doing the indies. I'm really worried about promoting and pushing the indies. And that's how I met Kendra and Edward, of course. Because the whole idea is they were hungry and grateful that I want to take the time to talk to these people. I met them at Free Comic Book Day. I met them in Wizard World. There was a huge line to see Kevin Conroy, and there was a huge line to see the voice of Mario from Mario 64. They were charging $40, $50 for an autograph, and I thought that was insane. Stan Lee, I'll be honest, he was going to charge $90 for an autograph, and I was like, why? You know, for everything that Marvel movies have made and everything that the comics has made, he's going to charge $90 for a signature.
That shit. I'd love to know.
Why does he need that money? For what? What is it paying for? The time? But these people have made the money on their shows and other investments. They don't need to charge $40 for a signature. Where is it really going? I kind of find that to be disgusting. So when I go to the conventions now, I go there to talk to the indie artists. And in return, not only have I spoken to the indie artists, a lot of them are going to be continuing working with us. One of them wants to put me in a comic, which I think is kind of cool. Yes. Yeah, Bob Gar.
Throwing that out there, you can throw me in Black Dog, Rebel Rose, anywhere you want me. Anywhere you want me.
It's on like Donkey Kong, woman.
I'll take a hit. I'd love to be in the comic.
Heck yeah. Send me your photo. We'll call you.
Danny not only takes the time to do that, I've written any sketch that you come out with and then silently stealing it while telling you an inbox so that I can go ink it myself. But you come up with such amazing, I don't even know, like, scenes for these two beautiful characters that you bring such emotion to a story. It's amazing to watch. Why not just lay it on the line? What is Black Dog and Rebel Rose?
Black Dog and Rebel Rose is, in a nutshell, the story of two very special supernatural hunters. One is half demon, one is half angel. The original story I wrote actually back in 2009 was a prose novel, way back when I was in my late 20s. God, don't tell anybody. Old I am. It was published by a small publisher. The amount of attention it got on the cult level was beyond anything I could have imagined. Eventually, I did pull the rights to it, so that way I could then republish it through Booktrope, who was my publisher now, major hybrid publisher. But everyone always told me, would love to see this as a comic. You're an artist. Why don't you do this as a comic? You do illustrations of your characters. You paint your own covers. So I decided to go ahead and go for that, and it's been massive. And essentially, the first storyline involves Stryker, our half-demon hero, who is absolutely swoon-worthy. He goes out to an abandoned town, runs in where he's expecting to hunt vampires. And he ends up running into this beautiful woman who is very standoffish and very suspicious, who also happens to be a hunter, and she's also a half angel. Of course, he doesn't know that. And so they kind of start out as rivals. Little by little, they get to know each other. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of gore. And eventually, there's some romance thrown in there that, and believe me, if you're a Twilight fan, look away, my child, look away, because these are not vampires that sparkle. This is not gonna be, sex scenes that have no titties and no ass or whatever. It's romance, it's action, it's characters you can sink your teeth into. One of my big things was that I really wanted to create characters who, how can I put it, they weren't just one-dimensional. Because I think a lot of the time, as much as I hate to say it, I'm stereotyping probably, but a lot of comic book characters, even in the indie scene, are one-dimensional. You don't really get your teeth sunk into them. They don't have history. They don't have anything like that. These characters do. So Black Dog and Rebel Rose is very character-centric. The fans have really responded well. They're fans worldwide, and I couldn't be happier that I created something that people really like. One thing I do want to mention, it is not for the kiddies, so please send your children out of the room.
That's another question I wanted to ask you, of course, because you mentioned stay away from Twilight, which we all are. My biggest question to you is that Twilight has ruined the vampire genre. That was the biggest fear. I was very close to reading the book because I don't want to bash anything unless I review it. The only thing is, I looked at the book, I looked at the cover, I have to agree with Stephen King, this is not well written. When I was at a Walmart, or at least and nobody believes me, when the guy at the counter was like, do you want to buy a copy of Twilight for $5? No. And then he was leaning over to me and telling me that it's kind of like when you work at Macy's, because I used to work at Macy's, that if you don't sell people the Macy's credit card, then they write you up if you can't sell a certain amount of cards. They didn't want to hear it. And I was like, yeah, so if you didn't buy the Twilight DVD and you didn't sell a certain amount, the managers were going to be on the clerk's ass.
Oh my God, I'm going to kill myself.
So I did pick it up, but I've only listened to it with the Riff Tracks commentary, and they, of course, tried to do this live, or they tried to bash it. But again, my biggest question is, how would you be able to get people to stay away from the most controversial genre ever and bring it back to people that understand what the mythology of a vampire or half-demon really is?
That's a really, really loaded question, and it's a rough question, I've got to admit. And I am probably not educated or savvy enough to be able to really figure out how to bring everybody back. I think trends come and go. Me personally, I'm into the old-school vampires. I'm into the vampires who are ugly, the vampires who are bullet fodder, the vampires that you drive a stake to the heart or slice the head off or burn them to rid the world of them, the old mythology. And in Black Dog and Rebel Rose, that's really what we have, are vampires that need to be disposed of like a plague. Don't think we can bring the teeny boppers over. I've got to be honest with you. And I don't know if we want to bring the teeny boppers over. But I think the best thing that we can do to kind of give the myth of the vampire, more oomph again, like it used to have, is to educate people about the original mythology. Go read the old folklore. And to write and create stories that center around vampires being the way they were in the old days, not this sparkly, pussy-ass bullshit.
My other question, of course, is, and I do apologize when you showed me, I believe it was when you changed your profile picture last night. And of course, for like a minute, I thought it was Tank Girl. And I do apologize for that, yeah.
No worries.
But I do have to ask you, though.
It was actually funny. I was actually drawing it and thinking that. And you must have read my mind.
Well, I have to ask you, have you ever read the comics at all of Tank Girl?
Oh, yeah. I have the special edition collection. I have big, thick copies of just the whole collections going all the way back to when they first started them. Love it.
Well, Kendra's going to kill me, but I think in about a year or two, we're going to start to talk about that comic, because I've been wanting to talk about that. We got 2 years, Kendra. Don't worry. I've noticed with genres, with bringing in old-school mythology as well as time periods, this does feel like the punk vibe in a way, the way the characters are dressed.
Yeah.
Is this kind of like a heavy metal type of ordeal?
It's so funny you say heavy metal, because I have a subscription to the magazine, and I've been a huge fan of Heavy Metal magazine for many, many years. And many of heavy metal magazines is my work resembles European comics. They're more sensual.
Right.
They're more, you know, the artwork is more similar to what you'd see out of France or out of Spain or out of Northern Europe or Britain or, you know, anywhere like that, you know, anywhere outside the typical Marvel and DC crowd. I think that's a very fair comparison. I cannot say that I really feel like I'm somebody who specifically copies any particular genre or style. I pull everything essentially out of my ass, and I hope that it works. I create characters that I feel like people would love, that I would think are hot, that are inspired by really hot people that I know. And that's definitely it. But I think heavy metal fans and European-centric comic book fans would definitely love my work.
And actually, I don't know, though. Danny, I mean, you say you don't pull from any one specific genre, but I gotta let you know, honestly, when I read your book the first time and started seeing it, it really, really harkened back to the Chaos Comics, the original Chaos Comics,
that's awesome.
With Lady Death.
That's
Lady cool. Death and Purgatory.
That is amazing. That's huge. I guess on my end, I can kind of assume what people think. But outside of James O'Barr, Wendy Pini, a lot of the heavy metal artists, they were all my influence. You know, I really enjoy seeing fans look at my work and say, hey, this reminds me of this that I really like. And that really makes me happy. That really makes me happy.
You do put in one of the famous Tolkien quotes, that not all who wander are lost. I am
right.
Curious. You definitely are a Tolkien fan. I can tell because you're a fan of fantasy. Now, we have the half-demons. Would there ever be, like, a half troll at all? We ever get like?
You never know. You want me to throw one in there? I'll be more than.
I will be the troll.
Will you model for me?
Sure. A girl once told me that I looked like a troll with shiny hair, which I did not take that as a compliment. But now you know what? Fuck her. I'll do it. I'll prove her wrong.
We'll call you Taliesin after the old Welsh myth of the shining brow.
Not a problem. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Demon in the. Is that because it's, like, I guess an interracial marriage? Like, how are you a half-demon exactly?
Well, I guess interracial would be a one way to put it. Interspecies, possibly, even. Riker, our hero, his father's a demon, and his mother was actually human, and she was a stripper. She was an extremely well-educated stripper who likes classic mythology and classic literature. I actually did write a story about them. It's called In the Neon, and that will be released as a novel, an illustrated novel again, either later this year or early next year by Book Trope. Pretty much how Stryker came to be was mixing human nature with paranormal and supernatural mythological themes. You know, and of course these characters, you know, Rose being half angel, the half angel, half human concept is actually very, very old. That goes back to pretty much biblical times where, you know, people believed that there was one point where angels came to earth and actually copulated with human women, created these giants called the Nephilim, were pretty much terrorizing mankind. That's kind of where that came from. What I really went for was taking these people who have a supernatural background, who actually have paranormal abilities, and I make them more human. I bring up kind of the human side, essentially try to give them struggles to go through, struggles that are more human than what their supernatural powers would possibly entail. So that's kind of what the goal is there. Some people look at me and go, that's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard of in my life. But enough people seem to like it that, you know, they go with it.
Well, actually, I do remember with Zeus, apparently he would come down, I think, in a golden shower and get women pregnant. He would come... No, seriously, he would come
golden in... Golden shower!
Yes, he can't eat...
This podcast...
Ow! Somebody call Ron Jeremy right now. Okay.
Yeah, it would be like this waterfall shower of gold, and it would just come down. That's how he would form. That's how he would materialize. Or sometimes he would come as a swan.
Right.
He would come as, you know, different... The golden shower I'm thinking of is not what you guys are thinking of. No, this is a different type of... But, I know...
Head out of the gutter. Yeah, but Leda and the Swan, I love that myth. Leda and the Swan. Leda being the maiden that he seduced in swan form.
So that's what I thought of, is that somehow angels would come down in human form.
Yes.
In the same way with Zeus would come down in in some sort of animal form or human form and just seduce and then go back up into the heavens.
Pretty much.
So I guess that's the way with the half-demon. But my other question is because when we think of demons, It's hard, because I've tried to get books on demonology. I've read a lot of parapsychology books. I've watched, you know, the B80 movies and the 2000, you know, whatever out there right now with The Conjuring and Annabelle. But with demons, are you able to get your hands on a book and say, okay, it's going to be based on this demon, or it's going to be based on that demon, or is it really hard to do research? Like, if you pick a demon, do you want to pick something that hasn't been put in a book before, or a demon that has been known that you can probably draw out a little bit of the mythology?
Me, personally, I kind of did both. I did do really heavy, heavy, heavy research. I bought the Dictionary of Demonology, which lists pretty much all the major demonic figures, going back to Abaddon and Asmodeus and Gog and all of these creatures that appeared in centuries and millennia past. Looked at the mythology surrounding them, looked at all of that good stuff, but at the same time, I also wanted to create my own universe with this. So, and this is admittedly kind of where the religious kind of freakishness comes through, is that sometimes I'll end up with somebody coming and going, wow, you're offending me because this is, you know, very, you know, this is religion based. It's not religion based. It's fantasy, and you have to take it as that. I have tried to create my own universe. Great example is that Stryker, our half-demon hero, he's half what's called true native. And in my stories, true natives are the demons that were specifically born from Hellfire. They're not fallen angels. Fallen angels are a totally different group. So you have, you know, different levels of demons. Father was a collector, specifically a master collector of souls. His job was to go and take, pluck the fruit and send it down in the handbasket, and he would do that by any wicked means necessary. Of course, when he met Stryker's mother, he became good and turned around, and, you know, that's a whole other story. For me, creating my own universe, my own, not so much, I guess the word species would sound weird, but my own kind of breeds of demons, you know, different types of demons, you know, within my own universe, it was really fun to take that and also combine it with the traditional mythology. So I could be a real stickler about some things, but not so much about other things. And it makes for really good storytelling.
And of course, there's always Pazuzu.
You know what's funny? You mentioned that. My first novel, Psyche's Gate, which was about Rose's parents, and that, again, is going to be released by BookPro coming up either later this year or next year. In that one, Psyche, her mother, goes to her, you know, goes to do a mural. She's an artist. She goes to do a mural for a very powerful, very mysterious man who has a lot of demon and monster sculptures in his private art collection, and one of those is Pazuzu, who is the demon who he was essentially used in ancient Mesopotamia to fight fire with fire. You would put him in your window, facing out. You didn't want to put him facing in because he was bad mojo if you put him facing in, but if he was facing out, he was so bad that he would keep the other demons out. So it's cool that you mentioned that.
It's good that he's taken a little bit more seriously than the last three or four Exorcist movies. Not the first one, but, you know, the other ones, 2, 3, and
right,
those two prequels that, you know, the less we talk about, the better. So I've always been curious if, like, somebody could actually take him, put him in a different type of novelization, and make him badass again like he was in the first Exorcist movie. I've always been curious, like, what he could really do, or what it could really do.
Well, he's a freaky character. I mean, if you really read the description of Pazuzu in a lot of the old mythology, he's got the body of a man, the penis of a serpent, the head of a dog or a lion. I mean, you know, he's one of these, like, holy shit, if I ever see it, I'm going to piss myself.
Every hero and villain has sort of a respect for each other, so to speak. And I take it that's going to be the same way with these characters. Like, it's not going to be your, you know, the typical 1940s speech. Like, is there, like, more of a rapport with the balance of good and evil?
I would say that there is. You essentially have certain aspects of good and evil meeting up, kind of flowing together in a way, in some ways. You know, when you in writing a story where somebody who has demonic ancestry and somebody who has angelic ancestry met up, and there's actually love involved in that relationship, without it being Twilight, of course, there has to be some level of I guess, balance. That's the right word to use. Balance, and sometimes enemies can become friends. Friends can become enemies. Like using a little bit of mystery in that area. Who's going to be good? Who's going to be evil? Who's going to be loyal to who? I hope that the fans find that that's the case.
Who seems to be, like, the biggest bad that these two characters have to fight? Like, is there a list, like, with Batman and Superman with the Rogue Gallery? Like, what would the Rogue Gallery be for these characters?
You know, bad guys always seem to be changing in the storyline. a little bit like, I guess it's a little bit like Supernatural. A lot of people compare it to Supernatural. It's every episode, we're going to go out and we're going to fight whatever needs fighting. Ultimately, you know, since I'm basing this on the mythology, down the road, my plan is for them to run into Lucifer, to run into the great mythological evil, quote unquote, and of course my own interpretation of him. You know, but in the meantime, you know, I love having different creatures and different monsters and different demonic figures or bad guys coming in and out. So there really isn't a specific arch villain like there would be a lot of mainstream comics. And concerned that the film is being based on, you have a specific antagonist. Her name is Zephira. She's a very powerful female demon who's also somewhat of a ruling queen, but she doesn't last beyond this story. So it's, again, I like to mix it up. I think that if you're just dealing with the same villain over and over again, you're going to end up with something that's stagnant.
I mean, I think it's something that you don't see very often today in a lot of comics. I mean, you have, with what you said, the big two, you have villains that they repeatedly old hat pull out, and oh yay, we know where this story is going to go. But with this one, and with quite a number of, there's a few out there that are taking the modern edge on it, and they're making it to where, yes, you have a continuing set of characters, and there is a specific continuity that's going on, but on a day-to-day basis, when in their world, in their timeline, it's not the same story that you're following. You have different aspects that get to shine through, and that's really cool to see in a story.
I do want to talk about the movie real quick. The filming. When is the filming going to begin?
Filming is projected, and mind you, this is an estimation, projected to begin around November. We are supposed to be filming a teaser trailer coming up this summer. That will basically be going around everywhere promoting the concept and promoting the story and promoting the film while we actually produce. Me personally, I've been very blessed to have producers who you know, when I brought the pitch for this film, they really, really came to respect creatives. You know, so essentially in a nutshell, you know, I have gotten to have a lot more say than I thought I would, but I am still pretty low on the totem pole as far as production goes. So there's a lot of stuff that they are working out that I am not privy to at this point. But I do know specifically that November, roughly, is kind of what we're aiming for.
So this will have a 2017 release date, if all goes well?
Potentially, yes. Yes.
And I take it this is an independent studio that's filming?
Yes, it is independent. Not to say that that's going to be specifically, you know, micro-budget. I don't have any clue what the budget's going to be. All I know is that it's going to be done. It's going to be done well. Personally, I am a huge fan of independent films, so I'm ecstatic that my characters, being indie characters, are being brought to the indie screen. So that's definitely very exciting.
Now, what about score and music? Will this be a heavy metal type of score?
We've chatted about that. It's definitely going to have a rock and roll vibe. I personally am a big fan of, you know, the old school grunge music. I'm a big fan of European agrotech and metal. So definitely we're chatting about that. It's definitely going to have a hardcore soundtrack. That's for sure and certain.
Any AC/DC?
I don't know about AC/DC, but I'm pretty sure that hardcore metal fans will still be pretty pleased when in the end I'll be all.
What about casting? Has it been cast yet?
Really lucky about was that we were actually able to find Stryker much more easily than I thought we would. We actually put out a paid ad in Los Angeles. Throwing stuck out there, just kind of seeing, you know, who would bite, because our thought was that, you know, casting these characters was not going to be really, really easy. They're not really easy characters to cast. And we were really lucky within the month that we, you know, our feelers, we actually found an actor in Los Angeles, Vincent Van Hint, who is an actor and model originally hailing from the Netherlands. And I'm absolutely ecstatic he's going to be playing Stryker. Really, really awesome guy. Easy to get along with. Very, very invested in the character. And he's perfect. He has the look. He has the snark. He has the vibe. We're there. We also have Rose's father cast. And a, you know, really, really great model and actor for that as well. Next is going to be Rose and Zephira. You know, and I can't really say much about that. I've expressed to production who my ultimates would be, but of course I need to kind of sit back and wait for them to give me the okay to make the announcement. But of course, obviously, if people want to kind of keep an eye out and watch what's going on with the film, then they should just head to the Facebook fan page and follow that, and you'll be able to see everything as it comes out.
One of the things that, of course, I asked you and I joked about in the interview questions, because I know that you post on the Facebook page about the abandoned building. Question is, if you were in that abandoned building right now, you know, that like that insane asylum abandoned hospital section, and you had the handprints and blood everywhere and the writings on the wall, what would you do exactly?
Lock and load, baby. Grab the rock saw and start spreading it around.
Have you toured any abandoned haunted buildings in your area? Because I've heard there's been several.
I do. I am a big urbex person. Urbex being urban abandoned spaces. Kids, don't try this at home. It's pretty dangerous. I live in San Diego, so one thing that I really do love to do is I love to take a trip out to the desert now and then to an abandoned town by the Salton Sea called Bombay Beach, where essentially there's maybe 100 people, and probably not even that, living out there. But most of the homes or businesses are abandoned, and you can literally turn out in what used to be this resort town, and it's like they dropped you in the middle of a fucking Mad Max zone. It's so awesome. It's actually one area that they are seriously considering filming some of our exteriors for the film, because literally it's like you're like, am I in California, or did I land on another planet? It's awesome. So yeah, I do love exploring abandoned spaces, and I'm very inspired. I love to go take photos. In a lot of my comics, a lot of the environments that I illustrate are based on photos that I've taken of actual urbex sites that I've gone to.
What is your next feature plan with your comics?
My original plan was to do individual issues. My entire BDR or property has actually been contracted by BookTrope to be released basically worldwide. So what we're actually going to be doing, instead of doing the individual comics from here on out, is we're going to do a full graphic novel of the original BDR or story, the Paradise Hill Hunt story. I'm aiming probably to have that done, I mean, with the film going and with releasing 4 prose novels in the series before that. I'm hoping to possibly have the graphic novel out by fall or winter, depending. You know, doing the individual comics was really fun. It's really great to have people collect them and, you know, all of that good stuff. But the graphic novel is right. The graphic novel is going to go far, you know, much farther than individual comics would on an indie level could. So that's probably the next intention comic-wise. I do have all 4 of my original novels coming out, again, with BookTrope. All of them are going to be illustrated. Not comic book style, but more like illustrated prose style with painting plates on them. First one's supposed to come out in August. That's the original BDRR story and the one that the film's based on. Then following that will be Coyote Night, which is the second book, the second adventure for Stryker and Rose. And then I'm going to be releasing 2 prequels, Psyche's Gate and In the Neon, which are about Rose and Stryker's parents individually and respectively. Those are all coming out as illustrated prose. So my schedule is pretty as of right now.
And of course, my question with Black Dog and Rebel Rose. We do know that issue number 0 was on Kindle and it was on DriveThru Comics. Is it ever going to show up on Comixology at all?
We've been waiting for that and waiting for that. It's been 6 months. BDRR went into Comixology in December. It still has not been released there yet. Comixology can take up to a year to get comics out. Unless you're DC or Marvel, you're going to be sitting on your hands waiting for them to get their shit together. And you're not going to hear anything. You know, essentially, their independent comic queue is so huge, so many people putting stuff out, that even if you're a little bit more well-known, you're still going to be waiting. So that's the plan. The plan is going to be on Comixology. The graphic novel definitely will be on Comixology. How long that's going to take, I don't know, because, again, they have a reputation to be just slow as molasses.
Yes, I've noticed it. Now, my other question is, you've been touring the Comic-Con scene, I take it. Are you doing another tour for, I don't know, you're in San Diego, and there's going to be, from what I've told, this huge Comic-Con in a few weeks. I hear it's pretty corporate, though, but are you going to San Diego? Are you going to be promoting yourself at San Diego Comic-Con?
Not this year, actually. This year's a work year. I'm so focused on the film, so focused on getting the books out. Going off, contacting me, where are you? Come hang out. Where's your booth? Blah, blah, blah. Sorry, you're not going to be able to find me this year. I probably will go downtown to where they do SDCC, hang out, have a beer with some colleagues, with some friends, you know, chill and talk business, but But when the film is out and ready to go, and when all of the novels have been officially released, that's when we're going to hit it up. We're using strategy here.
You're spreading your eggs out. You're not putting them all in one basket, which is good.
No, which is not a good idea. And you know, SDCC, you know, San Diego Comic-Con is the biggest. It's the largest in the world, as many people know. But there are also a lot of really good cons out there that aren't as big, where people other than Marvel and DC can get their shit seen.
Indiana.
Yes, I'll be there. Mwah. You know, New York, you know, throughout the Midwest, Phoenix, Anaheim, Portland. There are also great cons internationally. There's a Sydney con. There's a Melbourne con. There's cons in London and in Birmingham and in Glasgow and Stockholm and Amsterdam, everywhere. So what my goal actually is to do is to eventually get out there with the books and with the film and to touch base with everybody everywhere internationally, not just in the U.S., at the bigger and the smaller cons, but also internationally so I can meet my international fans because there are so many of them. I think that's where it's at. I think there's a bigger market internationally that a lot of people think about here in the U.S. They're like, oh, American comics. Fuck that, dude. You should see what they have in Europe. And it's $10,000 times better quality.
That's what I want to start working on. And again, we are going to, in the next few years, I'd say like 5 years or so, when we start to spread ourselves out. I mean, we're booked. Speaking of booked, we're booked for this year. But next year, in 2016, we're a little bit... I've tried to spread things out. But eventually, I want to sit down for 2017 or 18, the international European comics, and find out what they're all about. Because I've heard a lot of interesting things about them.
Okay.
And I want to see what that scene will be. But that's not going to be for another 2 or 3 years, because we really got to start to...
Danny, Attack on Titan.
Yes.
Favorites. Oh my god, I'm such
right.
an Attack on Titan slut.
Well, Danny, you know why she promoted that? Because we kind of do a podcast right now where we're reviewing and we're discussing Attack on Titan.
Nice!
Yes. It's called I'm going to discuss every last one. And Kendra, myself, and Edward, we're sitting down and we're talking every episode from the first season and we're going to start talking about the comics.
Yeah, we've been doing comparisons with the manga as well, so
yeah,
that's
my
job.
Yeah, you guys are actually going to be a lot more knowledgeable than me, because for me it's been patchy, as big of a fan as I am. I was kind of late to the party, to be honest with you. But one thing I can say is that if you look at the way I draw my demons, the way that when they're morphed in their true form, Attack on Titan influences on that look. I mean, my jaw hit the floor the first time I saw that shit. I was like, this is some of the freakiest ass, most awesome shit I was ever seen. This isn't horror. This is beyond horror. This is like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I just geeked off. The minute I saw it, I'm like, oh, I have to draw this shit. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I love how, like, they designed this and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, huge influence as far as that goes.
We'll be back right after this.
Hey everybody, this is Brian.
And this is Tony.
From the Salty Language Podcast.
Part of Podgaz Network. Check us out at saltylanguage.com.
We're a podcast about two old-time friends just sitting around and talking about whatever chaps our asses.
It's true. Whether it be music, TV, comics, books.
Yep, we have interviews at times.
Get a hold of us at Twitter at salty_language.
And again, go to saltylanguage.com for all of our other links.
I guess have a beer, you'll be fine.
And stay salty.
Remote Control is the new TV podcast from the Geekcast Radio Network. We'll be covering TV shows and topics from the year 2000 to whenever now is. We'll have special themed episodes entitled Pilot and Season Premieres, as well as finishing finales. We'll also have Season Pass episodes, where we take a look at an entire season of a TV show. Remote Control can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and www.geekcastradio.com. So tune in, because we are all remote controlled.
And I do have a lot of fans in Asia. A lot of people actually have told me that my characters and my storylines remind them of a manga or an anime, the way the characters are designed, etc. So like a cross between Japanese and European art. So yeah, I mean, definitely anime has become a bigger influence on me in the past couple of years than I could have ever imagined. And Attack on Titan is totally one of the ones at the top.
Oh, definitely. Which, by the way, I just wanted to tell you, Kendra, we are starting to become very big in Japan. We're getting some listeners in Japan. And Korea, and Canada.
Well, I mean, and that for creators, regardless of what you do, whether you're a podcaster, whether you're, you know, a comic book artist, the lines have opened so much over the last even 5 years to where we can out and touch other people through the web and be like, okay, I have the same passion that you do, and your art is astounding, something that we haven't had in previous years, and I'm so grateful that the world has just kind of opened its doors to all of us as creators.
You and me both, and it's become a situation where it was a very closed market 5 years ago. It was a real struggle. I remember in my early years, I'd cry myself to sleep at night because I just kept thinking, why am I doing this? Why am I doing, you know, I look like a fool. Society is judging me. You know, especially when my son was born, it was a situation where I was like, now I have this child to care for. You know, I remember being pregnant and actually crying and going, oh God, this poor child, his mother's going to be an artist. Jesus, you know, poor guy. You know, it's like this stigma, but now we can prove ourselves. And I was actually at the brand spanking San Diego Gallery of Comic Book. Kevin Eastman was there, creator of TMNT, one of the most awesome indie creators out there, a guy who, just like the rest of us, started from nothing. No one knew him back in the 80s, and now he's huge. You know, I mean, fucking Michael Bay is doing a Ninja Turtle movie now. You know, it's massive. And, you know, I go into this gallery show, and Kevin actually gifted my son, as well as the other children, with a hardcover comic book that he had done. And I remember sitting there looking around going, it's a different world now. You know, we can do this. We can, you know, films don't have to be made just from major mainstream comics and books. You know, an indie comic can actually get attention through social media and through, you know, non-traditional sources. It's such a blessing, and there are times where, you know, how people come out of the woodwork willing to support you these days. And the time is now. That's all I can say. The time is now. Time is now to do it.
I got to tell you, a lot of people thought that me putting together this podcast was going to be a waste of time, and I'm so glad that I was able to prove a lot of people wrong. Because for everyone who said this is a waste, a lot of people that have been putting together their podcasts have just dropped off the face of the planet. A lot of people have started to give up and say, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And you know what? For them, everybody wants it now. They want it now, fast and hard, and it doesn't work like that.
Oh, sorry.
It's...
You know, people assume that, you know, I'm a millionaire. I'm not even close. I watch my bank account just like the rest of us do right now. Not to say that maybe after the thing, you know, in the future, you know, yeah, things are going to get better, right? You know, I mean, things are getting better. Things are getting there. But it's slow going, and you have to have patience.
Yes.
You have tolerance. You have to be willing to put the work in. You know, when I announced that a film was being made of my work, people thought that I was, you know, going on the red carpet. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about here? Hearing about budgets that I know nothing about and, you know, watching my pennies just like anybody else, you know, and you know, the film itself probably won't even come out until 2016, 2017.
Yeah, as for the red carpet, we're independent. We have to pay for the red carpet.
Well, I mean, and me and Evan have to sit back and say that too. I mean, when we started, well, 5 years ago, we started in the inking game. Yeah, we've made network connections, but I mean, it's been us doing that. I mean, I was talking to Sean Howe the other night, and he's a up-and-coming newbie penciler. He was like, I adore your, you know, I want you to evaluate my work, and just for someone to come to me and be like, yeah, I want to know your thoughts on my work. I sat and I told him, I was like, dude, this is the best advice I can give you. My first year that I started inking, I did over 500 prints by different artists. I didn't do it for the money. I didn't do it for any kind of paid commission. I did it to own what I can do and to see that I really was able to put myself out there and do what I wanted to do. 5 years later, I've made so many connections with so many amazing artists, Danny yourself included. Mortimer, you know how I feel about you, bro.
Oh, yeah. But, I've got your back.
That's how we have to do it. I mean, it's not all about, oh, yay, you know, this got popular for one day. It's about the dedication that we have to our crafts, whatever they may be.
The Kardashian mentality does not fucking apply.
No, I don't believe in the Kardashian mentality. I will say this much. My father was concerned when I said I'm going to start doing podcasts and the way I was trying to do independent film. Was going to happen to Kevin Smith happened to me about maxing out the credit cards and paying it off and never getting anything off the ground? Because people just like said, oh, this is what a real independent film is supposed to be, and everybody just make excuses and walk away. But you know what? The podcasting, thankfully, has picked up. I'm not concerned about whatever, fame, for it, whatever it is with the podcast, I'm concerned as long as I get one person to listen, I'm down with it. And that's all I really care about. I don't think we're in it. You make a comic, you know, it's nice to have a little bit of a fan base and a little bit of an ego, that's okay, but you're not narcissistic about it, and I think that's a great thing. And I have been paying people. I've been paying for the ads. I've been paying for the storage space. I've been paying for the time, and that's okay. I'm just glad that at the end of the day, we get some sort of feedback. We get the networking and at least keeping a rapport. And that's what I wanted to do, of course, with you, Danny, is to keep that up. And in return, it's going to continue, because what we're going to do is, what we're going to be doing, Danny, as I said, not only will I be reviewing the comic on the website, and I will be working on some other reviews and interviews down the road and making sure that you get your face out there. And we'll be keeping up with that. We would like to see in the not-too-distant future if you wouldn't mind coming back on the show every now and then.
Oh, of course.
And if you'd like to come on, you know, once in a while for our Attack on Titan, if you want to have any discussions or anything for the Attack on Titan, that would be great. Of course, we have a bunch of shows coming up in 2016. We got Wonder Woman. We want to give her justice because, you know, Hollywood hasn't. The comics kind of have.
It's lame.
Sailor Moon. And, of course, somewhere in there, I want to see about Tank Girl. Because I'm so curious about this character. I really would like to know. I wanted to do Power...
You're just rolling her eyes.
I've... You know what it is? The movie is on every other night on Stars at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And I can't get through that movie, and there's got to be a reason why it was made, and I can't figure out why.
Same reason that Barbed Wire was made.
Right. Oh, they all came out in 96.
No, I mean, I think that honestly the one I would love to see Danny come on and do with us are the Road Warrior and Fury Road.
That's not a bit. I was just going to get to that.
We're making a date now.
Yes.
I'd be there with bells on.
Tell her the dates.
I'm there, dude.
Yes, we're
going to... Let me get the dates for you. I'm so down to have you on with that.
Yes,
I'm a Mad Max slut. Oh, my God. It's...
Hey, I grew up in these
movies. And then I was in bed on bed rest with, like, a laptop on my belly watching fucking the Mad Max trilogy over and over. My poor son. No wonder he likes Vroom Vrooms.
Here was the thing, is that... Jurassic Park and Mad Max 4, two, you know, the quadrilogy movies came out this year. And I had to flip a coin, and in all honesty, I picked the right side with Mad Max over Jurassic Park. I knew that, I'm going to be doing a written review on Jurassic World, I have to for Geekcast, but I don't really want to. I watched Jurassic Park 3, and I said, you know what, drop mic, walk away. Let me tell you something, did you go out and pick up the score, like, you know how they brought back vinyl? They actually have the vinyl with the chrome spray paint on the record.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
There was another...
No, I have not yet seen that.
Yes. You can find it in your local Barnes & Noble or Target, yes, where they have... Wherever vinyl, you know, 2015 can be sold. I loved Fury Road. I saw Fury Road at an AMC dine-in with a specialty Mad Max drink. A road...
Cocktails and badassery. I am there. I'm pissed off I wasn't invited. What the fuck?
Yeah, we have a lot to say about Mad Max. Yeah, this is going to be a good one. My favorite, I don't know, this is going to, because we've seen all of them, correct? I mean, stupid question, I know.
Yeah.
My favorite is Beyond Thunderdome, for some reason. You know, Master Blaster.
Dude, just admit it, you got the Hodger from the Turner.
I love Road Warrior.
Where are we, Raggedy Man?
Yeah. Me Master! Barter Town!
Who? Big shit.
Yeah. Pig shit. I thought that was Alfred Hitchcock for a minute.
No.
It is.
That was his thing, you know?
I thought it was Wilford Brimley for a minute.
Yeah. It's pig shit. Thunderdome!
I have diabetes.
Welcome to Thunderdome, bitch.
Yeah, right. Wilford Brimley, bitch. Exactly.
Eat your oatmeal, bitch.
Can't wait to quit this job.
So, yes, it's official, Dan. You're going to be joining us for the Mad Max discussions.
I'm so honored and so just... I'm fangirly squee over here.
Oh, we're going to be helping plugging and promoting the hell out of you after reading this book, yes.
I already do. I don't know why we're making it sound like we don't already.
No, me. I'm talking about me. We. I'm in Venom mode right now. Me. We. Parker, it's us. Yeah.
I'm going to need to catch up.
Well, no, you see, you got to remember, Mortimer is just my stage name, and then Jeremy is my biological name.
I love Mortimer, by the way. That is, I need to create a character that is Mortimer the half-troll. I've got to do this.
Okay, you do.
It is on.
But can I tell you the origin of the stage name? You're going to love this. Okay. The Mortimer name is from, if you ever seen Batman 66, there was this hand puppet called Mortimer.
Is this gonna be disturbing or
no? There was a character called Marsha Queen of Diamonds, and she had a aunt played by the late great Estelle Winwood, and she was a witch, and she created this lizard creature called Mortimer, and this hand puppet came out kind of like the Munsters, and she called it Mortimer.
Nice.
And of course, one of my all-time favorite movies from Cary Grant was Arsenic and Old Lace. Mortimer Brewster. So that's the other reason.
Nice.
The J. Julian Groucho Marx, because Groucho Marx's real name is Julian. Fine is my real biological last name. And Junior is from Edward D. Wood Jr.
I'm going to change my name to Kratos.
Nice.
Kratos Hale.
Kratos Hale.
I'm sorry, you walk into a room with the name of Kratos. Everybody's going to call you a vamp immediately. You are a badass motherfucker. Period. Kratos. Want to drink, Kratos?
So, Danny, of course, where can the good people, because, as you know, Kendra, Edward, myself are promoting the shit out of you, but everyone else, where can we find you and your books?
Really right now, the best place to find me and my books is on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook under Danny Smith Comics Creator. Just type that in when you're searching for me. I'm quickly getting to the point where I can no longer accept Facebook friends, but...
You squeezed us in, so that's all we care about.
Right? I would really love to direct people to go to the film page at this point. Even though we're kind of being a little bit conservative about what we're releasing, that's going to be picking up very quickly in the next couple of months. You would go to facebook.com/BDRRmovie. That's B like baby, D like David, double R like Rose, movie. Sure, that would be facebook.com/BDRRmovie. That's B like baby, D like David, double R like Rose, movie, and facebook.com/BDRRofficial. A lot of concept artwork, casting photos of cast members that we've selected, any kind of interviews, any kind of upcoming news, anything like that whatsoever, and eventually the teaser trailer will be posted there. So definitely go check it out. Get in on it early while we're just starting out and we're not so busy that we can't talk to you anymore. And if you're really into checking out just the books on their own, you can go to facebook.com/BDRRofficial. There is also an international Facebook page that's run by a German fan, the Danny Smith International fan page. I don't know what the address of that is exactly. You can search for it, but what I would suggest is going straight to the official comic and book page track on books like that. So you can also visit me at my website at dannyquickdraw.com. We're still kind of working on that. I'm going to be starting a blog there where I'm going to be chronicling everything from making this film to releasing the new books, doing artwork, to just bullshitting. So anybody wants to get to know me, come on over. I love meeting new fans. I love meeting new colleagues. I love meeting new friends. All are welcome, as long as you're not, trying to get in my pants or whatever. Which I get a lot.
How is it
going? But the final question, I know we kind of trailed off for a sec. Really quick, can you recommend any European comics for newbies?
I would actually go and pick up a copy of Heavy Metal Magazine at your local bookstore. That would be my best suggestion, because you're going to get a massive sampling of what's out there from all over the world, all over Europe, also going down into places like South America, Central America, and sometimes even Asia. You're going to be getting a really good continuing and ongoing story that come out in each issue. That would probably be the best place to start if you're a newbie. Me personally, I'm a big fan. I'm actually a huge fan of Noé. who is actually, I believe he's actually Argentinian. He's not European, he's Argentinian. He does a lot of really great erotic comics that are also just beautifully illustrated. And so definitely he's one of my favorites. But, and of course, you know, just artwork in itself that's featured usually alongside European comics would be the artwork of Luis Royo, who's Spanish. He's one of my favorites of all time. My heroine Rose, definitely her look was inspired by him to some extent. But heavy metal is going to have all of that. So that would be definitely my recommendation.
Okay. Again, Danny, I thank you. And what we're going to also do is when I emailed you with the Facebook, I'm going to be taking all of your notes, where your Facebook is and your Twitter. I'll be adding them to the show notes, of course. I'll definitely be plugging where you are. Kendra, of course, has been plugging you like crazy, and we'll continue to do that. I do say we because, you know, now that we're Hunter Galcast, we kind of, like, do everything all together now. So they've been doing it, but, you know, all together now. We'll definitely, of course, as we know, we'll have you back for our Mad Max discussion. This is going to... Of course we were going to have you, but I figured, you know... I was going to say...
Now it's on like Donkey Kong, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was going to be a surprise, but I think you kind of knew once you started talking about Mad Max you were going to be on that one.
Hooray!
And, of course, Kendra, got anything new to plug right now?
Oh, let's see. This weekend has been absolute chaos for me, not going to lie. I've got 3 books right now that I'm working on, respectively, trying to get pages done as quick as possible because my pencilers are crazy and think that an inker can do 20 pages in a week, so...
Whatever.
Right? Ugh, on top of everything else, but the big ones right now are the big 3. I've got Angel Wars that's going on, issue 0 by Steve Wachowski. I know it's not his last name, but that's what he's going to be for me right now. He's my Mike Wazowski. We've got that one coming out through Until We Sleep, and then I've got Sicko that's coming out through Exciting Comics with pencils by Chris Madd. And then the one I'm currently inking on is Whoa, and that one's going to be coming out through Ravenfish Comics. That one is the one I would keep the biggest eye out for because that one's with pencils by Timothy T, and that boy literally knows how to make any art. That was me in a nutshell. I'm done.
Ed, you got anything to plug?
I'm still working on pencils for the second issue of Vapor, coming out through No Gravity Studios. We're working on getting the first one colored up and ready to go, so it'll be out sometime this summer, hopefully. Completely penciled by me, inked by my beautiful associate here.
There isn't going to be a book I haven't touched. I need everyone to know this. I'm going to have my inks everywhere.
Yeah.
Nice!
Got inks going down on a book coming out through Exciting Comics called Time Arc. I'm already about 7 or 8 pages deep in that, plus the cover. Pencils by Phil Will. Looking great. It's chaos, and I love it. And some other little secret side projects that Kendra and I are working on in deep, dark shadows of eternity. So hopefully we'll be able to throw a Kickstarter once everything's ready to go and get a bunch of support behind us and get a bunch of epic books in y'all's hands.
Well, you know, with me this week, I've got another interview with Todd A. Davis tomorrow night. Then we've got our Attack on Titan discussions, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And this week, I have to go see Jurassic World and review that, and that's not going to be pretty. But I have some other written reviews coming up on GeekCastRadio.com. Archie vs. Predator, Issue 2. I, of course, have a couple of other written reviews on Uncle Scrooge has come back from IDW. So I've been asked to do a written review on that one. And a lot of other interesting things, of course, we have coming up. And, of course, you can find us over at Twitter at Hunter Galcast, Facebook, Hunter Galcast. We have a group page, The Hunter Galcast. For any of the fans or guests, I've created that page that anyone who's been on the show or anybody who's been fans of us, I'm promoting the hell out of you. The Podcasters Cafe is another one where I'm promoting and helping some other podcasters network. And I want to thank all the new listeners. We have some great surprises coming up. And, of course, the polls have closed of which was going to be our 100th episode. Now, we recorded, and which is going to be the 100th episode? You're probably wondering. Drumroll, please. It's going to be Terrorvision. Terrorvision is our 100th episode, folks. Now, I am a huge fan of Citizen Kane. We will be discussing that as well. But it's going to be 101 or probably 79 or... But when we record Terrorvision, it will not be uploaded until we reach our 100th episode. So this is going to be episode 71 as we speak. And then, of course, we've got Todd A. Davis tomorrow night and the Attack on Titan. So I would say that'll be up by the time we're ready to record in September. So that's great. Danny, And of course, you can leave feedback at hunnickfeedback@gmail.com. Danny, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, Danny, no, thank you. Thank you. Kendra Edward, as always. And we will talk to you all next time.
Ah, brave new world that has such putzes in it. You know, kids, a lot has changed while your old Uncle Joker's been away. New Gotham, new rules, even a new Batman.
It isn't 65 years in the future, but Legends of the Dark Knight has gone beyond. Batman Beyond, that is.
Ah, the new boy. Ears are too long and I miss the cape, but not too shabby, not too shabby at all.
Join Steve and Mike as they delve into the remaining episodes of the podcast, where they'll cover Batman Beyond, products, games, and more. Check it out only on GeekCastRadio.com.
Emergency. Batman speaking. Warning all of you to brace yourselves for big news.
The biggest.
Tell them, Robin.
Holy superlatives, Batman! It's really exciting.
Greetings, citizens. Join me, your old bat chum, John S. Drew, on my journey to discover what it is I love about the classic 1966 Batman television series on the Batcave podcast. Each episode, I'm joined by a guest host as we review the classic television series. There's a new episode every 2 weeks. Same bat time, same bat channel on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at thebatcavepodcast.com.
Holy memoranda, folks! Make a note not to miss it.
Good thinking, Robin.